Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Last program, we have Bob Marshall on our program. He's a former Virginia delegate, and he's written a book, Reclaiming the Republic, which gives a history of the U.S. and gives some strategies as to how best that conservatives can win elections, the tactics that they need to use to counter the progressives, socialists, whatever you want to call them, who are using tactics to take this country over, basically. So we have Bob on again, and I want to welcome you again to the program, Bob.
Well, thank you for having me.
So before we just gave a little bit of background about who you are and just touched on your book and the fact that you've done studies into the history of the U.S. and you've put a lot of information under one cover with this book. So why do you feel it's so important that Christians get involved? When we look at the country as a whole and the situations this country's in right now, why do Christians need to get involved?
Well, you don't have to trust me, but listen to Christ who said, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's, which means there are spheres of life over which the civil government has no control.
Yeah.
But there are spheres of life over which there is control. And if you're going to render to Caesar, you have to, and Christ told us to do that, you have to know the official, the authoritative powers of Caesar in order to know, is Caesar doing what Caesar's allowed to do?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know how a bill becomes a law, or how you can stop a bad law or pass a good law, or how you can run a precinct for a candidate which will uphold the natural law, how are you being faithful to the injunction that Christ gave us? You're not being the salt of the earth. You're not being the light of the world if you don't do that. You weren't given the gift of faith to keep it to yourself. And just think about this. There were three people in salvation history who knew how the government operated, and it was necessary for them to know that to provide direction and a saving path for the chosen people. Mm-hmm. Joseph of the coat of many colors became the vice regent of Egypt, the second in command under Pharaoh. He brought the chosen people, what would be the chosen people, from out of Egypt into Egypt so that they could grow and prosper. Moses, the one who was to lead them out of Egypt, mm-hmm. was raised in the courts of Pharaoh. He could walk in and talk to Pharaoh directly. I can't walk in and talk to Donald Trump. You have to know how you can access this. And then St. Paul, who when he was being persecuted by the Sanhedrin, which was kind of like the equivalent of the Jewish Senate,
mm-hmm.
he was brought before Festus, who was the, this is in the book of Acts, the Roman governor in the province down there. And the leaders wanted to prevent Paul from preaching Christ and Christ crucified. And Paul said, wait a minute, Festus, you can't turn me over to an alien jurisdiction. And Festus says, what do you mean?
Mm.
And Paul said, I am a Roman citizen.
Yeah.
I can only be judged by Caesar, not this power over here. Well, this about knocked Festus mm-hmm. off his seat. And he said, you know what? You're right. I have got to turn you over.
Mm-hmm.
So here's Paul in what would basically be a First Amendment fight on freedom of speech and the government pressing it, appealing to Caesar.
Yeah.
Well, if St. Paul did it, Moses did it, and Joseph did it, we certainly can do it.
Absolutely. And we have to know how, like you said, we have to know how the government works in order to influence government effectively. That's something we don't see. And I know that Christians have a tendency of shrinking away from being painted in a negative light, of being, they feel intimidated if they're called names or such as that. And I think the progressive left definitely uses that fear that Christians have, because the progressive left has become so very good at calling names and, calling Christians who take a biblical stand, calling them bigots and such as that. So, and Christians tend to shrink away from that kind of confrontation. But in order to impact the culture, we have to be willing to take the flak.
Well, if you, Diane, if you understand, and somebody says, well, you're forcing your religion on me. You say, well, wait a minute. No, I'm not forcing my religion on you. The law against murder is a natural law.
Absolutely.
Even pagans know this. So
mm-hmm.
if you understand the natural law background of the founders and how they tried to implement this, you cannot be accused of forcing your sectarian beliefs on somebody else. But you have to know the natural law background. You have to know how this was applied, and you have to know the brakes that you could put on. There are two governmental tactics that are very effective. One is to condition the use of the money. The second thing, especially in our country, is to restrict what the courts can do to the legislative actions. And Madison, who's the father of the Constitution, credited with being the father and founder of the Bill of Rights, he talked about the use of the money. And conditioning the use of the money is the most efficient and fast way to get results. Let me give you an example.
Purse strings. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So what you say is, you can't spend money for X, and you do that in the budget.
Mm-hmm.
How does this work? I'll give you an example. In early 1976, a friend of mine did a Freedom of Information Act, which is a request of government officials for certain documents.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a result back which said that the then Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, it's now Health and Human Services, had spent tax money to kill about 280,000 children by abortion. I thought this was a scandal and outrageous.
Our government paid that money to do that.
There was no authorization. There was never a law passed to say you can use money to kill kids by abortion. But the agencies were doing this anyway because they were, you know, funneling money to Planned Parenthood.
Oh, okay.
This was, you know, quite a ways back there.
Right.
I took the Freedom of Information Act, and when I was in high school and college, I had belonged to a group called Young Americans for Freedom, which was founded by the Buckley family and National Review. I went and pulled a congressman off the floor of the House of Representatives who also was in this group, and I had known him. I gave him the Freedom of Information Act, which proved, beyond a doubt, this is a government official saying that, you know, we use this money for abortion. And I said, look, from 73 to 76, there was only one vote on the floor of the House of Representatives or the Senate dealing with abortion. Actually, it was one that I devised, saying you can't use legal service money, which was supposed to be the anti-poverty lawyers, for abortion litigation. But again, all the other legislation was bottled up in committee. So I told this congressman, we need to get a record vote. The only way that you can get a record vote procedurally is on a money bill, because otherwise there's something called a rule in the House of Representatives, and it governs the terms of debate.
Mm-hmm.
And the people, the Democrats, wanted to duck this, except on the appropriations bills. Well, I knew this because I had worked up there.
Okay, yeah.
I gave this to the congressman. He said, there's a freshman here who might be interested in this. That freshman turned out to be Henry Hyde.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I recognize
and
that name.
I didn't know this at the time.
Uh-huh.
And he said, let me take this. And I gave him some suggestions for wording, and I gave him the Freedom of Information Act document. And about 6 weeks later, there was the amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
amendment.
About 3 million kids are alive because of that Hyde amendment. Well,
wow.
I didn't know that any of this was going to happen.
Well, right.
But I wanted to get a record vote to put people on record.
Right.
You need to get people on record so you know whether you support them in the next election or you oppose them.
Yeah. And everyone's
so
heard
you
of
need
the Hyde.
A record vote.
Every pro-lifer has heard of the Hyde amendment. And,
right. So that's,
and even
that's
now,
how that happened.
Yeah. And even now, the efforts of the left, because has it been made permanent now? I can't remember. Previously, it's had to be reattached to appropriations bills and such. But anyway, the leftists hate anything that restricts abortion, and they definitely want government money to be spent on those abortions. So, yes,
right.
It's
right. And then the second thing, and again, the reason I know this is effective, because when I was working for Congressman Bob Dornan, I was with him in the U.S. Capitol on a conference committee. A conference committee is a meeting of representatives from the House of Representatives and the Senate to iron out differences in a bill that both bodies have passed, but have passed it in different forms.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Rangel, a liberal Democrat, Catholic, New York, I mean, he was fought in the Korean War, so he was actually a bona fide, you know, patriot and war hero, but just liberal. He came up to us and started a conversation, and I'll rephrase this, and I recount this in the book. He said, look, you guys and I differ on the abortion question. But if the Supreme Court, because the Hyde Amendment was challenged, he said, if the Supreme Court had said they're going to spend tax money for abortion, and mind you, he opposed the Hyde Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Bob, meaning Congressman Bob Dornan, I would have put in court stripping bills faster than you could have. So I knew the tactic was efficacious, because here's a liberal who opposed the Hyde Amendment who realized that Congress cannot lose the power of the purse without losing 99% of the power that they have.
But So he would have been willing to start
take the ability away from federal courts to even hear challenges on this thing if they had gone the other way. Now, let me give you the second thing here. The courts have been where the liberals and progressives have made the most headway.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I point out in my book that the jurisdiction of the court, meaning the kind of cases that any federal court can hear under what's called appellate jurisdiction, is totally controlled by Congress. I cite Justice Chase from 1799, Justice Frankfurter from about 1948, and John Roberts, the current Chief Justice, who was an assistant attorney general under Ronald Reagan in about 1981, as discussing that the entire appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court can be taken away. And in fact, this was done on the marriage question in 2004, and I document this in the book, where the House said, they passed a bill that said no challenge can be taken up against state laws where they don't want to recognize an out-of-state civil union or marriage. Republicans passed it in the House. Mm-hmm. Republicans were in charge of the Senate. George Bush was president, but nothing happened. They sat on it.
So
just because you have Republicans in power doesn't mean you're going to get anything. You've got to know the rules of government to get effective results.
Even before the Obergefell decision in 2015, there was an effort, I think, by Ted Cruz and Mike Lee to take away the jurisdiction, I guess the court stripping, take away the jurisdiction of marriage, the determination of marriage from the courts. And, of course, that went nowhere. So,
well, actually, what I put in the book, it did pass the House. It did. This was 2004.
Okay.
So that was done.
So it went further.
Our people didn't know this, and again, it died in the Senate because our people were not clued in on the rules.
And sometimes I believe very strongly that Congress hides behind court rulings so that they don't have to make tough decisions. They say, well, the court ruled, and that's all that matters, and that doesn't pertain to this bill. But they knew that if they stuck their Senate, Mitch McConnell, I'm assuming, was still Senate Majority Leader back then, and he didn't want to stick his neck out and make a bold statement on marriage, which is very troubling.
The Constitution does not establish the court as deciding what the supreme law of the land is. That is Congress, okay? So you've got, if you understand that the jurisdiction can be taken away when some congressman or senator tries to absolve himself of further responsibility, say, wait a minute, you can take that away, and we can fight that out in the state level here.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to know that, and I'll just give you I had a conversation with a member of Congress, I guess in early 2000s, 2002 or 2003, and I said, why don't you just strip jurisdiction away from me? Now, this Congress, I knew him. He went to a Ivy League school, law school. He said, you can't do that. I said, yes, you can.
They're not being taught the Constitution in law school.
Taught case law, where one court cites another court, but they don't go to the history of the legislation of the Constitution.
Yep.
It's
yep.
very clear. And again, in the Federalist Papers, which was the set of essays that was put together to get the states to adopt the Constitution, Alexander Hamilton, it's either in 80, Federalist 80 or 81, the last paragraph, he says words to the effect, if the court steps out of line, you can pull the jurisdiction away from them. And in fact, this power is so absolute that after the Civil War, there was a fight in Mississippi in which a newspaper editor wanted to print certain things, and the general in the occupying army down there said, no, you're not. So the newspaper editor filed a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
The lawsuit was actually heard by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court recessed for the summer, came back, but in the meantime, the Republicans in Congress passed a statute which says there's no jurisdiction for any federal court to hear a challenge like this. When the court reconvened, they came back and said, we can't make a decision on this case because we have no jurisdiction.
Oh,
case dismissed.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's how powerful it is.
Wow. And they do none of that. They do none of that. I mean, they say they don't even have to impeach You know, I always encourage congressmen to, you know, use your power to impeach these radical judges. But they don't even after that, they just even pass law. But the way it is, it's all turned upside down now because if, you know, if Congress passes a law, then it's going to be challenged. They're going to go to the courts, and the courts will decide whether the law is legal. I mean, that's the way it's topsy-turvy now. But that's not the way the Founding Fathers envisioned it.
No, it's not. And they put checks and balances.
Yeah.
But they depended upon a knowledgeable public.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to get this knowledge in a public school, I'll tell you that.
That's for sure.
That I put in this book here.
Wow. It's amazing how much in just the last, I would say the early 1900s, turn of the 20th century, beginning of the 20th century, when John Dewey got involved in the education system, when everything began to slowly change the way children were taught and what children were taught. I mean, it was slow in the beginning because they did not want to, these progressives, shall we call them, or what they call themselves. I think they're regressives. But anyway, they didn't want to change things quickly because American parents would have said, you can't do that. That's not right. We don't want our kids taught this. But they've gained more visibility because they've lost their fear, because now the parents have been educated in the public education system, and they don't know how things work either. And they, unfortunately, with taxes and stuff, too many families have both parents working and such, which is not good for Americans as a whole.
I was in the legislature for 26 years. Mm-hmm. I worked in Congress for 6 years. Mm-hmm. I devised a whole host of amendments. I did public policy research for about 15 years. It overlapped with my time in the legislature. Uh-huh. So you've got almost 40 years experience that I have, that I put in these about 250-some pages. Take advantage of this. Take advantage of all this information, which you will not find in any other book. Matter of fact, there was a homeschool group in Texas, which is recommending my book to homeschool parents. That's called Torch down there.
Okay, fantastic. So, again, this cover, we've just like, touched, they're very, hardly touched anything that's in the books. There's so much information here. And it's 200-some pages, you say? The book is
254 pages. If you go to Amazon, type in Reclaiming the Republic. Okay. Again, that's Reclaiming the Republic. You can get it. It pops up. You can get it on the Kindle or get a hard copy. Okay. If you don't want to give Jeff Bezos money, you go to Alibris or you can go to Tan Books and get it. But again, please get this book. Please read it. We need to have armies of educated citizens to defend the laws of nature and nature's God, just as the founders did. If we do this, we can roll back this transgender buffoonery in the public schools.
Yeah.
We can press again to restore the right to life. The other side doesn't have an inevitable lock on this. They just have been active.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's important to be active. It's not magic. It takes work.
Yeah, it absolutely
And again,
does.
Christ said you have got to do it. Render to Caesar. That means you got to know what Caesar's doing and act.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I wanted to also note that you have three appendixes at the end, and I'm just going to highlight the first one and the third one. The first one is what is judicial supremacy, and that's talking about, of course, judicial supremacy, which we see very prominently across the country and to the point where I believe we're living in an oligarchy now rather than a representative republic. And then your third appendix is dealing with the transgender issue and transgender, the next domino to fall unless we act. That's the third appendix. But real quick, you said that, you know, we hear a lot about tolerance today, but the Declaration of Independence does not say anything about tolerance. Just briefly, how did we get here? Again, I'm going to point to the education system, but what are your thoughts on the tolerance issue?
Tolerance is now considered to be, you have to be tolerant of error. The only thing tolerance was originally directed at was restraint in the face of some kind of evil or serious difference with the person based on the necessity of friendship or living in a society. If you had a geometry teacher announce to a school board, hey, I'm going to teach that a triangle is a plane object with four interior angles equaling 6,000 degrees, you wouldn't hire him. You can't be tolerant of error.
Right.
So you have got to understand that tolerance is not accepting of error. But that's what the other side have done, and they've been very shrewd on this. They say, you know, the thing in the scripture about hating the sin, not the
mm-hmm,
sinner,
mm-hmm.
When they say that we're anti-gay, we're not.
Exactly.
We're anti-gay behavior.
Yeah.
But they do that to put us in a kind of
a
posture of not really listening to the scripture. But that is how subtle the other side is.
Yeah.
Very coy, very well practiced, but you've got to be as wily as the other side. Remember, be as gentle as doves and as wise as a serpent in going after his prey.
Yeah.
So you have to do that. If you can do it, you can win. So I would say pray, think, and act in that order. Get this book, read it, and you're on your way.
Yeah, and again, the book is Reclaiming the Republic. And you want to tell us again how to get the book?
Go to Amazon and type in Reclaiming the Republic.
Okay.
Or go to Alibris, A-L-I-B-R-I-S, which is a collection of online bookstores, and do that. Or go to TAN Publications.
Is that it's TAN, T-A-N, T as in Tom?
T-A-N. It's in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay. And it's TAN Books?
TAN Books, right.
Books.org. Yeah, this is great, Bob. I mean, definitely I would be promoting this book. It's just fantastic. Again, to have this all under one cover, this is fantastic. Do you have a website or anything set up?
No, I don't. But,
okay.
I mean, if people want to send me an email, it's robertgbobmarshall@gmail.com.
Okay, robertgbobmarshall@gmail.com. And I do encourage
Correct.
Folks to get this book. And if you have questions or want a quick education, zap off an email to bob@robertgbobmarshall@gmail.com. Thanks so much
Correct.
For your time. I really appreciate it. And
thank you for your efforts
touch.
In Pennsylvania. Okay.
Okay. Right, take care. Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.